The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Ollie Mann, and before we get on with this week's show, I just wanted to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For more information on building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now on with the show. Last week, Beyond the Fence, a musical by a brand new writer and composer, hit the West End stage. The Telegraph said the production held up against rivals like Mrs. Henderson Presents. This paper, The Guardian, said that a strong cast gave the piece some welly. The Independent said Beyond the Fence won them over. All the more remarkable, then, that Beyond the Fence was conceived, written and composed by a computer. Well, sort of. Today, I'll meet the people behind the world's first computer-generated musical and assess the potential of music made by machine. Cue the music. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. So, last week I headed down to the Arts Theatre in London's glittering West End to watch the world's first computer-generated musical. It is called Beyond the Fence. I don't know what I thought a computer might come up with. I suppose I expected something about Windows 95. But I definitely wasn't expecting a computer to write a musical about the Greenham Common Peace Camp. So, joining us in the studio to tell me all about it, we have Dr. Kat Gale, who produced and directed the series about the show, a documentary called Computer Says Show, which is on Sky Arts, Dr. Bob Sturm from the Centre for Digital Music at Queen Mary University of London, and on the line we have Dr. Nick Collins from Durham University, who developed the software that contributed to composing the music. First of all, well done, everyone. I went to see the show, very much enjoyed it. I imagine...
You weren't the Guardian reviewer then?
Sadly not. I imagine that you weren't convinced you'd enjoy it until quite close to the end of the process. There's a lot at risk, isn't there, Kat?
Well, I guess the thing about this whole experiment is that we really, from the outset, had absolutely no idea how it was going to go. And I think we were all really pleased and thrilled that it is turned into a musical which audiences are going and seeing and actually enjoying as an experience in and of itself.
Okay, so break the idea down for us. How did we end up in this position, Kat, with both the documentary and the stage show?
Okay, so it started out just over a year ago, and I think we'd just been talking about ideas for documentaries that looked at the creative process, success and failure. So I was talking to a company called Wingspan Productions who wanted to make a documentary on this kind of subject. And yeah, we just started thinking about what might we be able to do. And the idea of a musical came about because Wingspan had previously made a documentary musical and I'd previously made a film called The Joy of Logic. The idea was to, I guess, just sort of mash those two things up together. And after a bit of thought, you know, musicals, they have lots of different elements to them. So if you're going to think about computational creativity and what it's possible to do with computers in terms of generating, whether it's music or lyrics or story, they have lots of parts to them that you can kind of cut your teeth on, as it were, in an experimental way. But also, they're notorious in terms of being hard to succeed at. So they're a kind of art form that perhaps naturally lend themselves to some sort of analysis.
And also an art form that people always say there's a formula for a hit show.
Exactly.
You just need to get it right. The ending was wrong. It had the wrong kind of character in the middle. Didn't have a big enough song at the end of part one.
Yeah, so breaking it down, I guess that's exactly what it is. You know, we sort of, we hit on musicals. They're considered to be a formulaic art, you know, art form. Is there, they're hard to succeed in, they often fail. So is there something we can do with data analytics to try and work out what might be predictive of success? And once that analysis has been done based on what we know, is there a way using other computational systems to actually go about generating the content for that musical?
Okay, now you're using the term we. It's not just you, is it, and the composers of the
Absolutely
musical?
Absolutely not. No.
About half a dozen different academic institutions you went to.
Yeah, so when the process began, the idea came up, first of all. You know, I didn't know an awful lot about artificial intelligence or computational creativity when it all began. So just started looking into the field and seeing who was out there who might be able to contribute. to this process. So who might have something to do in terms of story generation or lyrics or music, and quite quickly found some really brilliant people doing some really fascinating research who were really keen on getting involved.
And one such person was Nick Collins at Durham University. Now, Dr. Nick, there's this moment in the documentary Computer Says Show when Benjamin Till, one of the composers, one of the human composers of the piece, goes to meet you to talk about how your computer can assist him. And he's sort of slightly frightened by your technology, which you call Android Lloyd Webber, and also slightly sceptical that it's able to assist him. Talk me through that first meeting and talk me through what it is that you have actually developed.
Well, it was nice to meet him. It's nice to meet someone who is a specialist in musical theatre and get feedback about a process. Now, if he was a bit scared, I'm sorry. I mean, the intention is not to be scary. There's still a human being writing the program. So any of this music software that's going to compose, it's not doing so automatically. There's always a hidden hand of a human being setting up that process. In terms of whether it could help him, and the way that the musical panned out in the end, I suppose the role of the computer primarily has been a sort of composer's assistant. We've been generating a lot of musical material that then was finally crafted, fashioned into the final arrangement by Ben.
And you were using what you call algorithmic compositions. What does that mean in layman's terms?
It's just a name for the process of writing a computer program that then has as its output some music. In this case, what I was generating was lead sheets, chords and a melody, just a lead melody line that would be the skeleton, the basis for a song.
But what's kind of horribly soulless about it, and I did sympathise with him when he went to meet you in the documentary, is you produced this sheet of music that had as its name Show Tune. You didn't even know what the show was going to be about at that stage. You didn't know which character would be singing it. You didn't know what the emotion would be. And yet your computer was able to generate a completely generic show tune. You can see how to someone like that who loves musicals and has written musicals with his partner, that just feels like the antithesis of what he does.
So there are two ways round that it's possible to generate songs. One is starting from the lyrics, and one is just making some musical material and then setting it to lyrics later on. The majority of the work we did for the show was the latter kind. It was just simply making a kind of generic lead sheet, and then someone else would have to deal with the lyrics later on.
And some of the music information was put in by you, wasn't it, Bob? Is that right?
Yes, I was in charge, or I was helping with a project at City University of making sense of hundreds of hours of musical theater. And this is building algorithms to have the computer listen and sort of pull out the meaningful information from these audio recordings, which is extremely difficult to do.
So what's the meaningful information in a chorus line?
Things like chord progression, who's singing, is it a chorus, is it an individual, is it a solo, is it accompanied music, you know, the chord progression and the melody. So you get a abstract version of something that looks like a lead sheet in a sense, right? These are the chords that occur, and these are the times that they occur, and the melody goes like this above it. So to have a human listen to hundreds of hours of musical and transcribe it is extremely difficult and time consuming. But if we can have a computer, even if it has it's error prone, have a computer get us nearly the way there, and then Nick takes this information and constructs an algorithm to make sense of this information such that similar types of lead sheets are produced, similar chord progressions, melodies that follow the chords, then we're reaching a point at which algorithmic composition assistant is able to enrich what person's creativity.
And Kat, as you were suggesting, it's not just actually the music that was informed by these algorithms. It was the lyrics, it was the book, it was the whole concept of the show. Talk me through how we ended up with a musical set at Greenham Common, because it seems to me unlikely any computer could have generated that.
Sure. Well, I mean, there are lots of different processes that fed into and ended us up at Greenham. So I guess you can break it down into the elements that had to be generated, first of all. So In addition to the music, we had an idea for the musical, which came from something called the What If Machine. So the idea, the central premise, which was generated by the team at Goldsmiths, was what if there's a wounded soldier who had to learn to understand a child in order to find true love? So we had the idea, and then there's a team in Madrid who generated the plot arc for the musical. And that was, similarly to the music, it was generated on the basis of an analysis of existing hit musical shows. That the way we got specifically to Greenham was basically Ben and Nathan had all of these constraints that they were working with, and they went to their well-known computational tool, Google, and they knew also from the data that the setting for the musical had to be in the 1980s. It couldn't be in the US, so they just went for domestic settings, and it had to be a time of conflict.
It couldn't be in the US because that would make it less popular,
exactly,
according to the computer analysis.
Yeah, apparently that was not predictive of something which would be successful. So they put all of those things in, and one of the first things that they came up with was the Greenham Common Songbook. Suddenly you have a scenario where people naturally would sing. You have the characters that you know are needed, but also Ben in particular was quite enamoured of it because, you know, he's the child of a C&D woman.
And then, Nick, I imagine that provides challenges for you as well, because the computer doesn't know, your computer doesn't know, that it's creating songs for a cast almost entirely made up of women to sing, and English women who presumably actually would be singing in a sort of folky style, because basically, let's be honest, they were hippies. That's something that you can't channel into your computer, isn't it?
The program does have an argument, a parameter for the range of voice, so that could be utilised. But I knew nothing about Greenham Common until a few weeks back. And in fact, I hadn't listened to any of the musical material till the show itself, because I thought I better not cherry pick. I better not impose my own critical judgment on which things get through.
Kat, can you tell us how much of Nick's computerised algorithms got through into the final show tunes that we're watching on stage?
Well, basically, every song is based on computer-generated music. So Ben and Nathan had this Herculean task. And, you know, this is partly why it's a large part of what's really interesting to unpick in the documentaries is the process of having what they had to go through. So they would sit and they had a pianist and they would play through all of these lead sheets. So what they would do is they would go through and find the core elements of the melody and say, okay, well, this is going to be a verse, or we want this bit to be a chorus, or here's a chord progression that we want to repeat over and over and over again underneath this song. So they'd go through that, and it took them a very long time, but I think they've done it incredibly effectively.
I mean, that tonal issue, Bob, I imagine, you know, this is an area that you work in a lot and you're really interested in how this can develop, but isn't that always going to be a ceiling on this kind of work? That actually, for example, if you're writing a humorous song, I imagine a computer can easily generate something kind of in the cabaret style or something that sounds like a circus, kind of da 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 da. If you're doing something that's a bit subtler than that, where the lyrics are underplaying the humour or doing something ironic, computers just aren't there yet, are they?
Well, it's not a matter of asking whether the computers are there yet, but whether it can help or aid a composer in generating such an idea. In the musical itself, there's a really funny number with one of the women on roller skates, and it was really nicely put together as a sort of a verse, chorus, strophic form. And whether the computer had in mind this particular funny episode, poking fun at a particular aspect of this person or not, it's irrelevant. It's that that Ben and Nathan were so good at doing what they do that they were able to make sense and bring these raw materials together and produce something that is memorable, at least in the moment.
I'm going to disagree with Bob in the sense that I do like to try and generate entire pieces in one go. And if we could minimize cherry picking, that would be great. So I think the biggest challenge in algorithmic composition is trying to create an effective piece every time, or at least improve the ratio of hits to misses. I am a little uncomfortable about the level of human intervention that went into later stages of the musical theatre project.
Why?
To be honest, I'd quite like the purity of allowing some of the program's outputs to get through to the stage.
Even if the producer and director say this is going to be a better show if we intervene and tweak it.
Yeah, but I understand also the need for faces that having the human story for the TV production and all the rest. But at the same time, in terms of evaluation, it's a lovely chance. It produces some really nice evaluation materials to have a high-profile show like this. But if only at least one of the songs could have been like something a bit closer to the original output. And after all, the program was generating according to large-scale formal rules anyway. So it's not that it was just making little fragments. It's just that the way that Ben and Nathan decided to select from it was just to grab little bits.
Well, this is the thing. So, I mean, is it fair to say that Beyond the Fence has as much to do with the computer generation behind it as Jesus Christ Superstar has to do with the Bible? You know, that you have a starting point, which is the algorithm, but then you need composers and lyricists to come in and do their thing on top to make it something creative. Or have you taken it, do you think, one notch above that? It's more than just source material. It's genuinely integrated into the show.
Well, I'm interested that you would say, you know, that you have to have, the humans have to come in there to make it something that's genuinely creative. I think that sort of implies that doing something using a computer-generated system is not creative. And I think it absolutely is. And what this whole process enables people to explore and think about is, well, you know, how do we feel about these technologies? How far can we go? And I think it's definitely fair to say that all of these systems and technologies are very new. Computational creativity is a very young field. And, you know, if you did this in 10, 15 years' time, who knows, it will be very different.
Well, hold that thought, because still to come, we'll discuss exactly how far we can go with computer-generated music in the future. Coming up next, a project from Spain, where another computer is generating music for orchestra.
This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you have many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design, so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/Guardian.
Well, musical theatre is in a variety of different styles, but how about full-on contemporary classical music? Well, a few years ago, a research team at the University of Malaga in Spain created a computer program called IAMUS that can compose exactly that. It took Brahms over 20 years to create his first symphony. It takes IAMUS 8 minutes to create a composition. IAMUS has also released an album produced by the London Symphony Orchestra and had its, although its creator likes to say his, music performed by orchestras all over the world. The creator of IAMUS, Dr. Francisco Vico, is on the phone now from Malaga. Dr. Vico, where did the idea for IAMUS come from?
It derives from a research project that we were developing here at the University of Malaga that has to do with biological modeling. So we were encoding biological structures that were represented like trees. We started playing around that concept and trying to give a completely different semantics to the genomic information that we were representing there. And then it came out the possibility of transforming that into sound, something that is not new at all. I mean, this has been done from the very beginning of computer science. But this time, what came out, you know, sounded in a completely different way, and then we wanted to explore that.
In layman's terms, what is the way in which genomic research crosses over with the structure of classical music? Because I think that will be a surprise to people that haven't considered this before.
There is a representation like a score. A score is a representation of music, and then you have the interpretation of the music. So this genome is a way of representing the information pretty much like in biology, in the sense that the information is encoded, you know, by compressing the information of the whole organism. If you have to represent all the information of an organism, that will give you much more information than what you have in the DNA. So it's a way of compressing the information there and then developing with the embryological method the information. So we try to make it evolvable in a way that evolution could be used to direct the representation towards something that is beautiful, that is artistic in a way.
And so is the first principle was to feed a machine with as much Bach and Beethoven and Mozart as possible so it understands it, or it created it all from scratch?
Not at all. I mean, here the approach is different just because of that. The algorithm develops its own style. So on one hand, we had to feed the computer with a lot of information, with a lot of knowledge, but the computer learns to compose music pretty much like a child does. with the feature that here the computer has never heard any other kind of music. So he knows that the piano cannot be played, I mean, a chord cannot be played with six fingers because we only have five, for example, or that you cannot play pianissimo, one instrument, while the other is playing fortissimo because you cannot hear that. So this kind of information is fed into the system, but it was never fed with Beethoven, Mozart, or any other contemporary compositor.
As you were speaking, I recall that scene in the film Gattaca, which is all about genetic experimentation, where there's a pianist playing with something like 15 fingers, something that couldn't be possible under the limits of our current genes. I mean, why not have a computer write something that we can't play?
Because the computers are very limited to play. I mean, we have synthesizers, which are wonderful, but we typically handle them and manage them by hand. I mean, it is not the computer by itself that can produce its own music, but it's we telling the computer how to play our music. So when you connect generative system like IAMUS with a synthesization system, you get very poor results. We are not at that level. Even though we have wonderful reproduction of a violin, for example, by sampling note by note and effect by effect, even that, the computer cannot take all the benefits of that. All the programs are privative and must be managed by hand.
And so there have been concerts, including one in Berlin, in a week or so. How do classical musicians feel about playing this stuff?
Pretty good. I mean, they find expressiveness there. Actually, they found an opportunity in doing that. I remember when we were recording with London Symphony and also here in Malaga when there was a premiere with full orchestra, the conductors, in both cases, told the musicians that they have a great opportunity in interpreting that music because there wasn't an author bothering them with the correct interpretation that they have to give. So it's, in a way, an opportunity for the artist to express a concrete interpretation of the piece.
And very often classical musicians, I guess much like actors, like to look at a text and say, ah, what was in the author's mind? What was in the playwright's mind? What was in the composer's mind? And the answer with this is data, yeah. So does that make it harder to play?
Well, it's completely up to you. There is nothing. There is no point of reference because the computer didn't have any feelings. And this is supposed to be, you know, a way of expressing sensitivity and feelings and everything. So it's completely up to you. It's just, you know, like something that you find in a very old building and then you discover there are scores that were written, I don't know, how many centuries before, and you don't know anything about the author. So how would you interpret that?
Presumably, IAMUS can just keep cranking out music indefinitely forever as a computer program. How would you know as a human being which is the stuff that's worth listening to?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know.
You need another computer program. I mean, you've been taking many, many years to develop this technology. Where do you see this technology at in 20 years' time?
I think that in the future we will have a lot of possibilities with the technology, in the sense that the cameras, the digital camera, democratize the way of making pictures. So today, basically everybody can do a great picture. If you shot enough times and if you're in the right place at the right time, then you can do a great picture. Something that could not be, 100 years ago. Now the situation is in a point where people need different ways of expressing them, their feelings. And the point is that music demands a lot of training. You know, you have to be for years in a conservatory to learn the language and to be able to express yourself. And that's a real limitation. I think people really want the technology to offer them this possibility. So maybe in the near future, maybe in 5 or 10 years, we will have algorithms that help people, you know, to make their own music. And many people will have the possibility of expressing themselves with music.
So actually, your vision of the future really is similar to what we're seeing in the West End at the moment with this musical Beyond the Fence we've been discussing. It's man and machine working together.
That's right. That's right. It must be a partnership because we don't have that fitness function, that function that will guide you to the right music that humans want to hear. So we will need humans in the end.
Well, that's an optimistic note to end on, Dr. Francesco. Thank you for joining us.
No problem. Thank you for calling us.
So, coming up next, what is the future for computer-generated music? That's after this.
If you've got a mobile business, you need an easy way to take multiple payment types with one integration. With Braintree, you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, credit and debit cards, and more. Braintree also has quick, knowledgeable developer support, so there's help whenever you need it. The Braintree V.0 SDK. One snippet of code and you're all set up and ready to start taking payments from customers around the world. To find out more and for your first £30,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/techweekly.
Welcome back. So, is there a future for music created by computer? Still in the studio, we have Dr. Kat Gale and Dr. Bob Sturm, and on the line still, Dr. Nick Collins. Bob, you've listened to some music produced by Eamus. Do you think that is in a kind of fetal stage, or do you think actually it's already pretty impressive?
No, it's definitely not in a fetal stage. I mean, creating music by computer and artificial intelligence is not a relatively, it's not a new field at all. I mean, we have pieces from the 50s, late 50s, generated by computers performed by a string quartet, and it's fantastic stuff. With the Eamus work, this is the first I've heard of music from it, their Hello World composition, which was not only composed, but also typeset in the music notation entirely by computer. And I followed along with the score and the music, and I found it quite poignant at times. Fantastic ideas in there. You could see elements in the score which didn't really make sense with what you heard. But, you know, what helps is this human touch of performance. One can render thousands of musical ideas as MIDI files without any expressivity to it, and it becomes quite banal when you listen to it. But to have an actual ensemble performing the work, it gives it a quite extraordinary element to it.
And Kat, there's a moment in the documentary where the director of the musical, Luke Shepherd, sort of says the reason he signed on was because he wouldn't want to look back in 20 years' time and think, well, he didn't take the opportunity. You know, this is going to be a landmark project. Is it a landmark project because it's a one-off project, or do you think in 20 years' time we will be writing musicals using computers on a much more accepted and usual basis?
I think the technology will certainly become something that people use a lot more. You know, you speak to Ben and Nathan, the other people who are involved in the project, how much their work has changed just because of the availability of different kinds of software. You know, you can orchestrate completely using the software that's available, or you can, you know, you can press a button and arrange it for different instruments. And these sorts of things are increasingly available. And you know, right now that might not be very good, but it will only get better. And I think a lot of the people that I've spoken to during this process are really interested in the idea of these systems, as they become more sophisticated, being quite effective tools for people to explore and their own creativity. You know, we are limited in terms of what we're able to create based on our education and our experience and, you know, what we're used to. You know, I might be completely used to the diatonic scale, but what if I wanted to create something, you know, in a totally different style of music? Well, if you had a system that enabled you to explore that kind of musical space, or it could be in terms of story generation or writing, you can, in a way, go beyond yourself or go beyond the limits of what you might be potentially capable of. And it doesn't seem like that's necessarily a bad thing.
Okay, so final word then, and literally yes or no. Do you think perhaps in, I don't know, 50 years' time, we'll end up with a musical that could be entirely written by a computer, as this one in a sense promised to be, completely written by a computer, no human intervention whatsoever, music, books, lyrics, and it will be satisfying, a hit and a critical success? What do you think, Nick?
Well, I can't just say yes or no. I think I would say we could do it within the next year, but as long as we didn't have to make a absolutely guarantee a hit, because there's all these processes that were developed for this project could actually be run to make an entire musical. It's just that there was a lot of human intervention later down the line.
Human intervention in watching it and deciding whether it's any good as well, I suppose. Bob, what do you think?
Yeah, I think my answer is yes, but to be a hit, I'm not sure. I think it's safer to say it to be a flop.
Well, on that note, I suppose we better end, unless, Kat, you have an optimistic view.
I'm going to say yes, because why not? Cats and, you know, things on roller skates have worked, so who knows?
Evita, that's a mad idea, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, there are lots of things which are unusual, so, you know, Why not?
And that's it for this week. Big thanks to all of my guests today, Dr. Kat Gale, Bob Sturm, Nick Collins and Francisco Vico. I've been Ollie Mann. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Ollie with a Y, M-A-N-N. This week's producer was Simon Barnard. Thanks very much for listening and we'll see you next week.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.